order. The first item is approval of the consent agenda, which includes minutes for the June 22nd meeting, claim vouchers from June 22nd through July 6th, payroll vouchers for the period of June 1st through June 30th, removal of delinquent accounts, invoices to be removed from miscellaneous accounts receivable. I think all of this was sent out previously, so we've had a chance to review it. Do I have a motion?
Yeah, I move that we approve the five items in the consent agenda.
I will second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda for July 13th, 2020. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Great. Agenda revisions, anything, Doug, or the board?
Nothing for me, Will. No.
Okay. The board okay on the agenda?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Okay, our next item is comments from the public. Sean, you're going to control this, right?
Sure. Yeah, if anybody would like to make a public comment, please just give me your first name and we'll go in the order I receive them. Hearing none, Will. Will, I think you're muted.
Our next item is the business items. The first one being Resolution 2176-20, establishing current schedule of deposits and charges for line extension unit prices. Travis, is he on?
I see Travis is trying to connect right now, Will.
Okay, we'll give him a minute.
Okay. Travis, are you on?
Yes.
Okay, you're up on the resolution.
Oh, that was quick. So we've got the resolution to update our schedule of deposits and charges. We brought this before the board last month, and you guys wanted some time for the public to discuss or ask questions. I didn't receive any comments from the public, Sean. I don't know if you received any inquiries related to that or not.
No, I have not received anything.
Okay, I think we've gone over it before. I'm not sure we need to. The other commissioners think we should dive into this, or any comments?
Well, this is Jim. Not so much the detail, but just the idea that, you know, we call it this revise the rates or whatever you call it, but it's a rate increase. I really don't think this is the time we should, you know, be talking about a rate increase when what we've been trying to talk about is how can we help our ratepayers in this time of this COVID-19 thing. And here we are instead basically putting out a rate increase, and I realize it's on specific things. It's not the actual electricity rates, but still it's a rate increase. And I don't know that what's the financial impact for us if we hold off on this for, say, 3 months or something.
Well, I'll let you chip in if you want, Sean, but I think the concern would be if we are failing to recoup the costs for individual services as they're requested, that those costs will have to be subsidized out of rates, which, you know, maybe haven't been budgeted for to come out of rates. So in the long term, it could cause an impact to electric or water rates because we failed to, you know, stay within our budget due to not recouping, you know, costs as they were accrued by customers requesting specific tasks.
I don't think this doesn't really meet the definition of a rate increase. These are services provided by the PUD, and the object of here is just to recover our current cost. So, Travis, you're right. If we don't recover the current cost, then the money has to come from somewhere, which could put pressure on rates.
I guess there's a concern that could be seen as supplementing things like construction or certain fees out of rates. So you're sort of using money that's coming in from rates that everybody's paying for specific construction tasks, or subsidizing work being requested for growth or for a specific job. You're using the entire body of ratepayers to, subsidize that work. So I guess that would be the concern, for the first several months is we're, using money for one thing for something else.
Yeah, that's called cost shifting, and we don't normally do that.
Yeah, some utilities actually handle it that way, where they just add surcharges to each person's water bill or power bill, whatever, for capital. In this case, I think we're making it very clear, where this money is going, and a lot of it is borne by people doing new construction who, in most cases, are already suffering sticker shock, and this is just another add-on to that. So I guess this is probably one of the better places in the current environment to charge these costs rather than, adding them to all the ratepayers' costs.
And I guess adding to that, a lot of this is new people coming in and building in the area. So is it really fair to subsidize those people out of rates from the existing population?
Well, if in fact that's what's occurring financially, is it really is a cost shift right now. And I guess that's what you're saying, is that we're at the break-even point now, so any not implementing these increases are going to cause an immediate impact on the budget from someplace else, i.e. rates.
The other part of that is we can burn through some of our reserves doing this, but again, that's probably not wise.
Yeah, Jim, this is John. You had a question about what the financial impact is. I'll have to leave it to Sean to communicate what the actual deposit cost would be. But I believe we budget approximately $800,000 for construction. That's an assumed amount. And the average increase is high because of the labor overheads that we've calculated to be higher than in the past. Probably in the neighborhood of $50,000 cross subsidy or coming out of reserves. $50,000, maybe $60,000 would be my guess.
Yeah, I'll just weigh in here real quick, Sean. That's correct. And as Travis said, if we don't, charge the customers who are incurring these fees, then those costs are then passed on to the rest of the ratepayers. And, one way or another, we have to pay for these items. And if we don't collect them at the time of the customer incurring them, then it does get passed on. It would be cost shifting.
I guess the other item is that we are being mandated to do a lot of things which have a cost associated with them by the governor's proclamations and so on. So, I think people requiring new service or what new connections or whatever should actually bear that cost. But
all right.
Okay, do I have a motion on this?
Yeah, I motion that we pass Resolution 2176-20, establishing the current schedule of deposits and charges and line extension unit prices. And I see we've updated that to be effective August 1st rather than July 1st.
That's correct.
Well, I'll second that. With reservations.
Okay. Make sure I'm unmuted. Okay. been moved and seconded that Resolution 2176-20, establishing current schedule of deposits and charges, be approved. This also includes electric line extensions. And rescinding Resolution 2147-19. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Travis. Our next item is Resolution 2177-20, affirming the district's COVID-19 pandemic response customer support programs and a brief overview of our COVID-19 webpage. Nicole?
Great. Okay, so I've got a little timeline here because I've got a couple of parts to this. Back on March 18th, the governor had issued Proclamation 20-23, and at the time, that was simply encouraging utilities to take any and all actions necessary or appropriate to mitigate the economic impacts to customers. Following that, on March 23rd, we had implemented our own parameters in response. And in addition to the governor's stay home, stay off the order, that included no more disconnects for a period, extension on payment plans to 6 months, and suspension of late fees. There's been subsequent amendments to that. And so on the 24th, they reaffirmed that, and then also in response to some utility feedback, stipulated that the prohibitions do not relieve a utility customer from the obligation to pay for the services. There were further amendments up until on April 17th. They changed it from encouraging utilities to comply with these to prohibiting us from the following activities, which were the disconnects, refusing to reconnect any customer for non-payment, or charging the late fees. So we were already doing that at that point. We'd been doing it since before it was mandated. It continued to extend the order as this lasted further, May 31st, July 1st. Then on June 18th, the amendment 2023.5 extended it to July 28th, but further required that all utilities develop a COVID-19 customer support program, which really was an overview of just what's available to our customers. This was to be consistent with the guidance document that they had attached. It was subsequently removed. That guidance document was removed from the website, largely in part of public utilities feedback through the Washington P&E Association, where we felt that there was an overreach in that PUDs have local control. We're governed by an elected board of commissioners. We're not governed by the UTC. Part of the guidance document that was objected to was the fact that they listed the UTC as the point of contact for all customers. That's a little confusing because we spent a long time and effort with educating the public about the difference between public utilities and the investor-owned utilities. So once that feedback was generated through the utilities via WCUTA, the document was pulled, and there's been a working group appointed to take a look at that guidance document and potentially amend it. And we're going to get here in a minute to a letter that we're asking. Then the most recent was on July 2nd, Proclamation 2023.6 amendment came out, which attached a new guidance document. This one, we'd already adhered to. We're still not. This extends no disconnects through August 1st, no late fees, continuing to extend payment plans. We've already been doing that, and that was one of the things that the PUDs made clear, is that we've already been doing that. We've led the effort in doing this. But in accordance with the guidance document, the executive director of WCUTA, George Kahn, also their staff reviewed it, and agreed with what we had already interpreted. So to follow up on that and make sure that we're in compliance with the guidance document, we have created a consolidated web page. Sean, if you could share the screen with me, or give me the sharing rights. We built a consolidated web page because we had noticed through Google Analytics that customers were going to the payments and assistance pages that had to shot to the top, number one page. So we had already been discussing that, and we created specifically a COVID-19 customer support page that took the payment assistance types of items consolidated on the one page and also listed both residential and business resources on that page that customers could click through. So having the consolidated web page gave us one avenue.
No.
That's
so cool.
Here. And so the first banner that comes up, this large banner will rotate, and one of them is the COVID-19, really obvious one that comes up first. They can click directly on the banner, or they can go up here under COVID-19, we made it a top menu item, and under customer support, this language in green at the top was required as part of the guidance document, and it also lists the fact that we listed a little caveat here that while we're not governed by the ETC, they've been designated as a single point of contact. So we've listed their number and their email address. And then we go on to say that although you may receive an automated disconnect notice, that's built into the system, that we're not doing the disconnects and that we're encouraging you to set up a payment plan. Now, our staff has been, from the get-go, very, very proactive in monitoring the customer accounts that would have been subject to disconnect and reaching out and contacting them in advance to set up the payment plans. This links to our assistance page. We also mentioned energy savers because anything people can be doing at home when they've got extra people using the hot water, turning on the lights, has an impact on their bill. Then we've scrolled down and we've added, as we've learned about new resources here, we've added resources for United Way, the business resources, the EDC, businesswashington.gov, U.S. Small Business. We also have a link to our emergency response pandemic here. So let's see, stop sharing. Part of the guidance document required notification to all customers. They give suggestions. We don't do bill and search for that purpose because we have so many thousands of customers on electronic billing statements. But what we did was it got timed perfectly so that we were able to get a notice about this customer support program page into our hotline newsletter, which goes out to every customer. So that blanketed that. We also will be putting out reminders about it on social media. Lastly, we already had entered into an agreement with Clown County to secure and administer some assistance grant funds under CARES. This was for residential customers. The EDC will be providing business customer assistance, and we will link to that site as well. And then we're already planning on continuing to increase the length of the time for the payment plans for customers. So to wrap this all up to be in compliance, we're giving this overview as part of a public process and asking for the commission to affirm the tasks, the things that we've already put into place and approving these actions in regards to this pandemic. So at this point, we're asking for a motion to approve this resolution affirming the district's COVID-19 pandemic response customer support programs, unless you have any questions at this time.
So what's the statistics on this? How many customers do we have in arrears? How many disconnects have we foregone and so on? Is this, you know, that was concerned initially that people were just, oh, I don't have to pay my bill anymore. So is that happening or not?
Sean, can you speak to that? We did respond to the Department of Commerce's survey, which was a requirement as well, although they have not finished collating the responses. And boy, Sean, that might be 30 days old at this point.
It's at least 30 days old at this point. As of this morning, we had around 1,400 customers that were past due. I don't have it exactly broken out by the 30, 60, 90-day buckets, but I can say that the 60 and 90-day arrearage is growing every week. And ironically, the 30-day bucket is the dollars in there are somewhat declining. That's because the people who are continuing to pay their bill are continuing to pay, and the people who are not are just getting further and further behind. So I could get you that information, Will, at a later date if you'd like me to. I just don't have it off the top of my head today.
No, that's fine, but, you know, I asked this question before. These people are in arrears. That's not forgiven. They have to make it up at some point. Do we have a program, and if we advertise that program, kind of to drive it home, that sooner or later there will be an opportunity to pay their bill? Are we doing that, and what's that look like?
Yeah, we're proactively contacting all of our customers that are either 60 or 90 days past due currently, and we're setting arrangements with them, a payment plan. And the idea is to go out no longer than 4 months with most customers. If we go out longer than 4 months, we're going to start getting into the higher bill months, and it will just be a perpetual problem for them to get caught up. Now, some customers that need to go out further, we are working one-on-one with those customers and coming up with payment plans. But for the majority of customers, the four-month option seems to be working. You know, the problem, and I can't say for sure what the success rate is going to be, because right now they're entering into a payment plan with no threat of disconnect. But, you know, when we get to that point of starting to disconnect, I guess that's when the rubber will meet the road, and we'll find out if people are actually going to hold true to the payment plan. I'm hopeful that it will be successful, but until we start doing disconnects again, I really don't have a way to currently gauge it.
And that's why the governor passed that First Amendment 2023.1 was to stipulate that the prohibitions do not relieve a utility customer from the obligation to pay for utility services. And we're putting that message out also on that page and in the social media messages.
Yeah, we enter into an agreement with all the customers that set up a plan that affirms that this is what the agreement is. And so there's no getting to a time where they have to make a payment and saying that they never agreed to it. So we are being extremely proactive, but I'm just not sure yet, Will, to answer your question, what it's going to look like when we start doing disconnects.
Hey, I got a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry.
You mentioned 1,400 people are behind. Is based on where we were when you gave me that report with businesses some time ago, does that number include those people that are on payment plans that, you know, cause their bill to look like it's behind when, in fact, it's part of a payment plan?
Yes. If they're behind, they show up in the 30, 60, 90 buckets, regardless of having a payment plan.
And so last time we talked about this, you indicated that actually on the businesses, quite a few of those were on a payment plan.
Mm-hmm.
So a good chunk of those 1,400 are still on a normal payment plan.
That's correct. I don't have the number. I could get it for you, Jim, the exact number of the 1,400 that are on a payment plan. I just don't have that in front of me.
Yeah, that'd be helpful. It'd be kind of like updating that spreadsheet.
Yeah.
It was about a month ago when we talked about this.
Yeah.
It'd be good kind of going on here.
Yeah, Sean, I think if we were to do that at least on a monthly basis, that would be good. And as the months go by, you'll be able to see those that are on payment plan that are keeping up on the payment plan and how many drop off. So I think that would be a good indicator of how things will end up.
I should add that we're also continuing to promote the Neighborly Assistance Program, because that's kind of a fund that we can take community donations through to pass through the OACAP to help with utility assistance.
That's good, Nicole, yeah.
We've got an ad coming out. We've had ongoing ads this year with Senior Sunset at times, which seems to help. And, again, social media and anywhere we can get that message out.
Well, you know, looking at this reporting on the virus and what's happening, this thing doesn't seem to be going away in the short term, and the vaccine is an unknown out there. Should we be doing some scenario planning of how we go beyond, or do we wait for the governor's edicts, or any thoughts on that?
Department of Energy is actually moving what they call into recovery mode. You know, hopefully it stays in recovery mode and we don't go backwards. Once they collate the results of the survey, they're going to have meetings discussing that very thing. Also, WAPUTA's meeting this week, and we've added that as one of the agenda items for communications roundtable to see what other utilities are doing right now and how we can, you know, how we can move forward, since we have to also be careful with the gifting of ratepayer funds issue.
It sounds like we need to plan for the worst case.
Well, and I'm hoping that the results of that survey, even though they're 30 days old at this point, I'm hoping that will be kind of an eye-opener for the Department of Commerce to really understand what we're up against. And they are aware. They've been asking if we want to have energy calls about going into storm season, because they're aware that that's coming up too. And if we're going to have more students at home and they're not going back to school, it's going to have a bigger impact too.
Okay, other comments?
No, I don't have any more comments.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Do I have a motion for Resolution 2177?
Yeah, I move that Resolution 2177-20, affirming the district's COVID-19 pandemic response customer support programs and a brief overview of our COVID-19 web page, be adopted.
I second that.
Been moved and seconded that Resolution 2177-20, affirming the district's COVID-19 pandemic response customer support programs and an overview of our COVID-19 webpage, be approved. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Okay, second part of this is we have a letter that was sent out to you for review that's a draft to be sent to Governor Inslee. That's just getting my copy here. It's in support of WAPUTA's letter that was requesting either an amendment to, or, well, they've had subsequent amendments with the proclamation, so now we're really asking to let us maintain local control and have an amendment to the guidance document recognizing that we've been the leaders in this effort, and also an objection to listing the UTC as a single point of contact, because we think that PUDs can do best in helping out their local customer base and understanding what the needs are in their county. We have a letter. I wanted to get the approval from the commissioners, and then if you are happy with it as it stands, we are trying to figure out how to best get your signatures on there so the document looks nice. We'll have documented that you approved it or had changes in the minutes, but we could take your signatures and digitize them and just add them on there for the purposes of the format of the letter to be submitted.
Yeah, I think I signed that. And Dave, I think you came in.
No, I put a wet signature on it this morning.
Okay, so Jim, you're the only one that needs to get on there.
Okay, let me make sure I understand what we're signing. Is it the, no. It's not the resolution 2177 that you're talking about.
It's a letter to the governor, Jim.
Yeah, right. Where is that?
It should be in the package there.
It was sent out after the packet. I think you sent
it. Oh, that's right. You're right, Nicole.
Okay. Okay. I guess I haven't seen it. So let me read it and just. If I can't come by tomorrow, which I may do, and sign it, you can do something with my signature.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, great. All right, our next item is, we got the letter of understanding and, oh, I'm sorry. Next item is letter of understanding 20-08 by and between PUD number 1 and IBEW Local 997. Doug, I think you've got this one.
Yeah, let me talk a little bit about this. This proposed LOU basically grants an effective lineman base wage increase of about $2 for the 14 journeyman linemen. We talked to commissioners about this. It's due to mainly to a significant wage and benefit disparity between our utility and comparable utilities. This was brought up by the union to us. We looked at both our local, our neighbor utilities' Port Angeles and Jefferson, who just signed new contracts recently. And we also looked at a number of utilities on the east side of the state that opened up their contract to provide increases for their linemen. And the reasons, of course, are the supply and demand, where linemen are hard to find. They're in high demand right now, with California trying to get as many as they can down there. We lost one lineman to California already. We lost another one to the city of Port Angeles already, too. So we've got, in the next few years, we've got a number of linemen that are coming up for retirement. So in order to maintain and keep our present linemen, and in order to recruit new linemen, we are recommending this $2 increase for the lineman rate, wages. So it puts us in a position that we don't like being in. I'd rather not have to do this, but in order to stay competitive, in order to to keep our morale high, we're a well-known utility that has a good reputation, and for that reason, we have in the past kept and retained our linemen. But with the kind of chronic shortage that's going on, and now and into the foreseeable future, we feel like this is a needed requirement for the utility. So basically that's it. It is in order to keep our linemen and in order to recruit new linemen into those positions.
Okay. Any
questions?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I got a question, because I've heard this several times about California. People go to California. What is it that's going on in California specifically that is drawing in linemen in large numbers? Is it are their utilities getting bigger, or is it construction? And so is this related to the growth of renewables down there? Or what can you give us a little insight instead of just it's California? Because I get asked all the time, you know, what's the big deal in California?
I'm sorry.
Others might be able to add in to hear John or somebody, but as you know, with the fires that PG&E had down there, they have a lot of work going on right now to rebuild their transmission and their distribution lines. So a lot of it's for that. I don't think it's any rebuilding or making utilities larger. It's mainly just kind of catch up in their case. Now, we, as I mentioned, we lost just one to California, and his claim was that he could make about twice the amount of money that he makes here. And then another one just went to Port Angeles. So it's not like it's California taking the linemen. It's all areas that are looking at it with the wages that we presently have.
Yeah, Doug, this is John. I'll add, there's no way for us to compete with California wages.
John, you're going to have to speak louder.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
That's a little better.
Okay, there's no way for us to meet with or compete against California. We're trying to compete with the local utilities. You're right about the demand in California is partially driven by the wildfires in conjunction with NERC and WEC standards, which they're trying to become compliant with, in addition to the number of interconnects and requirements for various bringing in new resources. So it's a wide variety, but primarily due to NERC, WEC standards and compliance, primarily driven by things like transmission line maintenance.
Yeah, and that's a good point, John, that you mentioned. We're not really competing with California from the standpoint that we're trying to keep up with California. We, similar to Seattle or maybe some of the other larger utilities, even PUDs, like a Clark or something, those have higher wages, and if someone wants to go live in Seattle area, you know, they'll end up going there. So we're just trying to keep competitive within the comparables that we look at. We have, you know, 8 to 10 utilities that we compare ourselves to when we go into negotiations normally, and what we need to do is to keep up with those utilities.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me that people in California are trying to get out. I lived in California for 6 years. Maybe these people need counseling, because you may make more money, but you're not going to keep more money with the tax structure and the social problems and so on, cost of living. So, but that's just one person, as I understand it.
Right, and my guess, Will, is the guy's just going in for a temporary period to make all he can. But that's just a guess. I don't know. And then get out when it's over.
Yeah.
Because they're getting a lot of overtime, too.
Other comments?
Yeah, I guess I'm still, I guess, you know, again, it's another increase. And you know, we're just at a time when that's not a good thing to be doing, you know, because it's got to be passed along, like you say, to the ratepayers eventually. I do appreciate that it's focused on alignment. I think that, you know, that they need all the help we can give them in terms of retention and keep them around and keeping them developed and so forth. But again, it's a cost issue for me. And I guess, you know, I on one hand, you know, it's like what, you know, controlling cost. But I guess one observation I can make is that because we're no longer paying dues to the Northwest River Partners and Public Power Council, that freed up $47,000 a year. And, John, I believe you said the additional cost around $50,000. So we're sort of break even on total PUD cost here in terms of comparing those two things, of which I realize were apples and oranges, but nevertheless, it all adds up. But it confirmed that wage increase is approximately $50,000 a year. Is that what you said?
It was about a net of $50,000 a year.
Okay.
Well, you know, the flip side of that is we're going into storm season. I think our customers are more interested in reliability and response time to outages. And so, you know, I think this is something that we just more or less have to do. It's a competitive market out there for labor, for a skill pool, and we have to keep up. I think if you look at the spreadsheets that we saw, you know, we're not we're still pretty down in the pack. So
yeah, I'm looking at them.
Yeah, I think this does affect. Well, definitely would affect responsiveness and reliability. We're actually down one crew in Carlsberg right now. So in the long run, I think you spend a lot more money if you don't do this. I think getting a full crew and getting the guys feeling like we are competitive, I think, is a big plus. Something that I believe we should do.
The other thing was, the one alternative would be bring in contract crews, and the cost would be much, much higher than this alternative. So.
Right. We talked about that. If we had to bring in an outside crew, the cost would be a lot more than a net of $15,000. It'd be, I think John had looked at the closer to $200,000 of an annual cost. So, again, I think this is the most responsible thing to do for us.
Yeah, I understand all that. And I guess, you know, I don't want to just belabor the point, but I guess if you're the kind of, we are the kind of utility that you say we are, a lot of respect, a lot of people want to work for us, so we have a lot of credibility and so forth. I wonder if a couple dollars an hour is really going to make a difference in keeping a lineman in our PUD versus going over to Jefferson or Port Angeles, you know, change up for $2. I've talked to a few linemen, and not here, but elsewhere, and that's kind of like, that doesn't sound like a big enough difference to go jump ship if you've got a good organization you're working for. But anyway, that doesn't really change much of this argument.
So do we have a motion?
I'll approve a motion to approve the letter of understanding 20-08 by and between PUD number 1 and IBEW local 997. I don't think there's any more to really say about it.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that the general manager be authorized to sign the letter of understanding 2008 by and between PUD number 1 and IBEW local 997. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. All right, correspondence communications. Doug, do we have anything?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go a little bit into CARES and a few other things in the staff report. I guess under this, I might just mention that the governor's proclamation 20.28.7, which had to do with the Open Public Meeting Acts and Public Records Act, he's extended that to to August 1st. So as far as a meeting like this, that at least extends till then, which is no surprise, but it's a new proclamation the governor came out with.
Okay. I think we'll see more later on.
Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner reports. Dave, you want to go first?
Sure. The last week of June was the quarterly Wahpeto Water Committee meeting, and probably the biggest single agenda item at that meeting was Tom Martin making a really good presentation on the projects that involve the salmon habitat improvement, where culverts are being replaced by, on some of the smaller projects, box culverts, and most projects they're being replaced by bridges, which is requiring utility relocates that are probably at the low end costing us about $35,000 per project and just going up from there. And just discussing some of the problems with trying to, you know, stay on schedule with WashDOT. They aren't always as considerate of the utility's ability to respond quickly to these, and these are court-mandated projects, so you don't always have a lot of time to get on them. And I think the Clallam PUD's probably been getting more of these projects early on than most other PUDs. I think Mason mentioned that they have had some also, but I think the other utilities are taking a big interest in this because if they don't have these projects in progress now, they're going to have them real soon. And I think one thing that was suggested is since the individual utilities aren't having a great deal of luck getting WashDOT to be a little more cooperative on a lot of these projects, that maybe goes to the Public Works Board or some other state agency to try and, you know, get more WashDOT cooperation would be good. So I think this is going to be something we'll be discussing quite a bit in future Water Committee meetings. Other thing, we did have some discussion on this UCC taking over the as Nicole went over there, the UTC becoming involved in what the PUDs have always had under their own control. And so I think Nicole covered that pretty well. Don't really need to talk any more about that. Other meeting, I went to the Squin Dungeness Chamber meeting, and one thing was mentioned there, the construction and the real estate industry are getting a lot of interest from people outside the area. In some cases, there, and actually quite a few cases, there are people who are just waiting for their employer to give them the go-ahead to work from home, and they're getting out of the big city and coming to places like Clallam County. So I think we're pretty well assured of having a steady stream of new connections in the coming, at least in the short and midterm here. Another thing that was mentioned is the West First Street project. Kudos to our crews that had some midnight maneuvers involved there. I think Doug is going to cover that pretty well, so I won't really go any more into that. But that's pretty much all I have to report today.
Okay, thank you. Jim?
There hasn't been too many meetings since the last FOP meeting, except the Hell Island County Executive Development Council. It wasn't a council meeting, but they arrange a coffee meeting with local businesses and our congressional folks, Farringer and Mike Chapman. And I've been participating in those, and a couple of notes from the last one. You know, we do talk about the business climate and what's kind of going on, and it's still a high degree of concern that we're going to lose businesses. A lot, maybe not, but some. But, you know, you only have to lose 5 or 10% before you cut into your margin, whether you're utility or what. And so this is still something we've really got to be paying close attention to and try to figure out. And kind of will, to your point earlier about, if this thing continue on, what else can we do? How can we get creative? And I think this is, we've talked about this before, but it's more than just, you know, looking at disconnects and, you know, payment plans. It's kind of like what else we can do. So I think we got to get creative. One of the things they did point out on the blog or on the, you know, on the internet connectivity and stuff like that, was they mentioned that somebody gave a really good presentation, a woman, got a name here someplace, so I can't find it out now. But she pointed out that Mason PUD3 had a very innovative, creative approach to interconnectivity at the retail level, I believe is pretty much what they said, and so forth. So, Doug, I don't know if you guys are familiar with what Mason 3 did. If so, give me a little input. If not, can we see what's going on over there? And that's pretty much all I had, Will.
Yeah, Jim, we are familiar with what Mason 3's been doing, and they're doing a significant increase. They've formed a broadband department. They have added broadband crew people. They've significantly added to their whole process. I'm interested, and I've been talking to them about how they're going to make it work. They have the funding or the revenue coming back from that to make it work. Steve will mention a little bit more here at the end of the meeting, but we have been talking to them. Kitsap, too. Kitsap was one of the ones that maybe who you were talking to, Angela, I think is her name.
Yeah.
That talked about it quite a bit, and we've been talking with her, too. So we're looking into it. Of course, our hills and mountains have a bigger impact on that whole thing, but we are looking into it.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, on that topic, Kitsap, you know, does not have electrical authority. They built, their business model is heavily weighted towards broadband, and they've done a lot of things which are, they formed local utility districts, particularly for broadband and so on. And Mason 3, Linda Goff is chairman of the NORDAD board, and they've always been pretty active on that. So maybe there is some opportunity to learn something there. Okay, I had a Energy Northwest Executive Board meeting on the, 24th. And we talked about this before, but Columbia Generating Station is still considered a dispatchable resource, which means that it can be dialed up and down to meet load requirements. There was a lot of concern about that initially, about cycling a nuclear plant. In fact, I had those concerns myself. When you start cycling 16-inch thick shell pressure vessels and mechanical issues in the control systems and so on. But so far, we had pretty good experience with that. And in fact, they have dialed it down to as low as 25%. The main thing that came out of that meeting, Elliot Manzer came to the meeting, or he dialed into the meeting. It was a virtual meeting. And he's concerned about cost, which he should be. But what's happening at Energy Northwest, there's a number of things coming up. that will have pretty high price tags. One is relicensing the plant to get it to run for an additional 20 years, which on the face of it looks like a very attractive proposition. But because of all of the loops that you have to jump through with the NRC, all the regulations, it's a pretty pricey exercise. So he's concerned about that. The other one is that Energy Northwest is looking at re-rating Columbia to squeeze a few more megawatts. In fact, almost 200 more megawatts out of it. But that would require, when you go in to replace major pieces of equipment, that you upgrade that equipment to accommodate additional output. And so, again, it's a pretty heavy price tag. And so what he's saying is, well, and the third issue was that the small modular reactor thing, which doesn't really apply because the small modular reactor initiative is based on utilities expressing an interest in buying a piece of the small modular reactor. The current scenario is that the SMR could be built on Site 1 right next to Columbia Generating Station, and that would reduce the cost significantly. But that would be by subscription, and so right now a number of utilities have expressed an interest, specifically Grant, so that doesn't impact Bonneville. Bonneville has said they are not interested in financing an SMR. So his solution was that he wants to work closer with the board. He's asking the executive board and the board of directors and members of Energy Northwest, which is the major portion of PUDs and metropolitans and so on in the Northwest all the way to Montana, that to get out there and sell that idea of relicensing. He wants to not be in the position to make any decision. He wants to get push from the utilities to say, yeah, we need to do this. So John Saban was nominated as a representative to kind of shepherd that process. And John has taken that on, although he keeps talking about he wants to be more retired. And I can appreciate that. But so John Saban will be the point of contact for that. The following day, we had a meeting of the Resource Adequacy Task Force. Covered most of the same items I've discussed before. The SMR, of course, is in that discussion, as well as renewables. It was kind of a new discussion, which I guess I kind of prompted. Energy Northwest has taken the position that they will not participate in any natural gas-fired generation. Now, there's beginning to be more and more concern about needing CETA, based on the analysis of a number of different organizations, including the Conservation Council, that there will be a shortfall in the future, which could result in brownouts, blackouts, and so on. So the thing has kind of been put forward that natural gas may be a short-term kind of a transitional approach to dealing with that. So anyway, we talked about, you know, does Energy Northwest hang on to their zero carbon nameplate, or do we say, well, we're willing to do that under extreme circumstances? We also talked about a consulting firm which has been hired to look at resource adequacy and what which are the hot buttons that the task force should be pushing and what we should be working on. That hasn't come forward yet, but when it does, I'll give you a report on it. There was an article in the Mason County, anybody see that? Mason County newspaper. It was written by the Communications Department of Energy Northwest, and they did this over Jack Janda's name, which he's commissioner from Mason 1. So anyway, I'll provide copies of that. It talks about resource adequacy. It talks about the SMR approach to addressing part of that. It does not cover the letter of understanding, which I've talked about that we have with NuScale, with E-Energy, which is the sodium-cooled small modular reactor, and the Bill Gates initiative for the those for the other technology of the small modular reactors. But it gives a good, it's a pretty good outline. It's a pretty good piece. So I'll get, make sure you get copies of those. And what else? I guess that's enough.
Will, may I ask a question or two?
Certainly.
On the Columbia Generating Station, when you're using it as a dispatchable resource, when you're not running at maximum, you're not generating revenue, obviously. So I don't understand, just because I don't know enough about it, but and maybe this is too hard to answer right now, but how does that affect the repayment of things like WOOPs and so forth? Is that a direct relationship, or is it just, you know, in terms of revenue paying off that bill, and what happens when you don't pay that bill? So I don't know if you can help shed some light on that for me.
Well, there's an understanding with Bonneville. They will make Energy Northwest whole. When they reduce output from Columbia, they get credit for the amount that they could generate. So that's, you know, it's, yeah, I know, it's you could question that, but, you know, the cost of running the plant, even when you dial it down, there's a, you're still burning fuel, you still got all the staff, you got all the security, you got all of that, so the costs continue to go on.
Okay, well, this deserves some further analysis, I guess, from my part. The other question I have, on your resource adequacy study group, I assume their scope is beyond Bonneville Power's authority area. And given that, I believe that's the case, then when BPA says their 2020 resource program indicates flat demand over the next 10 years, I'm trying to square, you know, and I realize there's the issue of coal displacements or coal closures is affecting that resource adequacy issue. But given all the renewables coming online or potentially coming online, how do you guys focus in on BPA? Because given they're the ones that are providing our power, obviously, and the ones we need to be most concerned about.
Well, we are collaborating with the IOUs, with the publics, which are generators, the Northwest Power Pool, and so on. And all of the conclusions is there will be a shortfall. And that's with the loss of coal, the prohibition on fossil fuels, the potential removal of dams will just exacerbate that need. So that's what's driving it.
Even within the BPA authority area?
Yeah, and we, you know, Energy Northwest, we have participants from Montana, Idaho, Northern California, as well as Washington and Oregon. So it's within the BPA service area, but I guess the fact that renewables are going to fill that gap is not universally shared. So that answer your question?
Sort of.
Okay, all right. Okay, let's move on to staff reports. The first is CARES funding. Yes, Doug and Sean.
Got to unmute first. Okay, let me start out just to give you a little update from employees and what's going on. We're all back to work. We've got all our craft out in the field doing a great job. We've got engineering and office and others working. We've got a few still on a program coming in a couple of days and working from home a couple of days. So we're actually looking into that for possible future possibilities when we come out of this whole COVID. There's been some real pluses about it, so it's being investigated, evaluated. So things are going fine. Employees are doing well. We want to keep that going. Regarding the CARES, that's kind of a little bit of a high point here. We've been working closely with the City of Port Angeles, and Nathan down there at the city has been kind of taking the lead on this CARES. The City of Port Angeles, the PUD, and OLECAP sent a letter to the Collin County Commissioners on 6/26, which basically showed the impact that it's having on us, and making a request for some funding from the CARES money. On 6/29 or June 29th, the Collin County Commissioners had a meeting. Sean and I sat in that and added some comments to it as it went along. The results of that was they had said that they were going to distribute $200,000. Our request was significantly higher than that. It was more like almost $600,000, but they were going to give $200,000 to the PUD, to the PA, and OLECAP for the utility side. The business side is separated. EDC is going to be given any money that goes to the businesses. The monies that we get will be going to residential only. The money also includes rent and mortgage assistance. So when we look at that $200,000 that they gave us and the proportion that we had originally requested, we ended up with about 12.9%, which was about $25,850 for residential relief for us, which we're happy to get anything, and we appreciate that. And we were talking earlier about what we can do. Certainly, that helps a lot without impacting our customers. So we will get some relief there. And Sean doesn't even know this. I just got an email probably about a half an hour ago from Nathan. It looks like they might have increased that $200,000 to $350,000. And our percentages on share on that would be about $45,000. So that's a nice increase there for what we had expected. I haven't gotten any confirmation. We haven't received anything from the county yet. I think it's Mark Lane, I believe his name, and the county is going to be contacting us soon, is what I'm told. Now, one of the not so highlights of the meeting that we sat through was kind of near the end of the meeting. Chris Green of the Department of Commerce has told us that they're not sure if there's more funding of CARES is coming. We had that kind of that carried out there, thinking a lot more was coming in the future. But at this point in time, they're not sure there's going to be any resources anytime soon. So I think the plus is that we can help a number of customers. We could certainly use a lot more than that, and we'll certainly continue to try to get more than that. But from that standpoint, at this point in time, that's where we are. Any questions on that?
How's the state budget looking? Do we know?
Yeah, I don't know, Will.
It's got to be suffering because everybody else is. But
right.
Yeah, Will, that was, Farringer talked about that at our EDC meeting a little bit. You know, it was hard following the numbers because he starts off with something like $6 or $7 billion, but then he starts subtracting out things that, the rainy day funds and things like that work it down to the real bottom line of what the state is short. And it's somewhere between $1 and $2 billion right as of about a month ago.
That's the shortfall.
Yeah, real shortfall. I mean, they've burned a lot more money, but they're pulling it in from other places to cover those unemployment costs and health costs and stuff like that. The big impact, though, of course, is going to be in your discretionary programs within the state budget, which is things like natural resources and, well, this kind of, you know, some of this stuff, but because they can't take it out of the K-12, the educational programs, and certainly other mandated programs like unemployment. So the state is, and of course the issue is whether you raise taxes or cut programs. And the appetite seems to be to cut programs. Nobody wants to raise taxes, either because of, you know, the politics of it or especially election year. So that's a rough number at this point. But everybody was pretty clear that we're far from over with this thing.
Yeah, I see higher taxes in the longer term, but oh well.
Yeah, another positive on this that I kind of mentioned but didn't complete is OLECAP will get for Clallam County citizens rent assistance and mortgage assistance of, I think I was calculating about, well, it was $122,000 for, that was when we were getting $200,000 between us. If that goes up to, let's see, $350,000, that should, if it does, that should give them about $213,000. So, you know, they are still our customers, and so it's a plus for them. And if they have money to pay their mortgage and their or the rent, they might have some more money to, you know, put towards their utility bill too. So I think that whole thing is a plus for the county.
Those numbers seem kind of small compared to the need, but what do you do?
You know, well, you're right. We had asked for a lot more.
Yeah. Hey, Doug, let me ask a question. In the last board minutes, you know, actions for the staff, we had asked OLECAP to advise on what percentage of donations received from our ratepayers go to commercial business versus to individuals. And Sean, maybe you gave me a figure, or we heard a figure of around $14,000-$16,000 or something is what our donations have been, or is that what our customers are getting back from OLECAP?
That's what our donations have been, Jim, and all of the funds that come from our ratepayers go back to assisting our ratepayers.
Okay, good. But
yeah, that was
not a lot.
Right. Not a lot.
Yeah, that was one of the follow-up things I was going to mention. Is those we had a few action items, and the one you just addressed, Jim, yeah, the donations received by OLECAP through our ratepayers' funds goes 100% to the individuals, no businesses, and 100% to Clallam County customers, not Jefferson or any others. It stays within the county.
Yeah, those contributions go up and down, and in the past we've put on kind of a public information campaign to get people to give more. Probably not a good time to do that now, but it might be worth thinking about.
Yeah, I think Nicole mentioned that we are pushing contributions from our customers for something for others that to help them pay the bills. So we are doing that.
Yeah, I would encourage that because there's a lot of folks helping other people in this county, and I think the generosity sometimes surprises us, and or me especially. So. Putting the message out there is at least important to do, and I think we might get something from it.
Right. Okay, good. And we'll, as long as we're covering the action items from last meeting, I'll mention them now if it's okay.
Sure.
The first one was check the meeting call number to ensure it's correct. It is correct now. There was a fail. We failed to provide the access code for the call-in, And there was one person that tried to call in that didn't work out, but we've got it corrected, and it should be fine from now on. We covered the second one, and the third one was a contact waived to determine if they're interested in collaborating with us on possible expansion of the broadband into the county's west end. If Steve's on, you might want to add something, Steve, here. I asked you to address
that. What we've done, let me raise my camera so you can see all of me. What we've done, we've tried contacting Wave with no response. It appears that as a private entity, they really, it's not in their business model or best interest to try to partner with a public entity. So I'll continue to try to contact them and try to talk to someone, but at the moment, I haven't got any returns on my phone calls. In the meantime, though, we're working on, just so you know, we're working on three different projects to extend fiber and capacity for the district. The first one is we're going to do a microwave shot between our airport substation and the Silverado substation. We're also working with a couple of ISPs to extend fiber in the Forks area for the Quileute School District that will hopefully help about 60% of the kids in the Forks School District to be able to get internet connectivity. Also, we're looking at applying for a grant to run, instead of doing the fiber, along with the fiber shot from Airport Silverado, also doing a fiber backbone on the ground between Airport and Silverado. And what that would do, it would allow the ISPs to possibly pick up more customers off of that backbone to Joyce. The timelines for those three projects is the fiber extension to Forks for the kids is probably only going to take a couple of months. So that one's going to be really good, especially for school starting. The microwave shot's probably going to take about 6 to 12 months. Just to, the big hang up there is the FCC. You've got to get licensing to be able to, you know, get spectrum to be able to make that microwave shot. And then the third one, the bigger project, trying to get fiber to Joyce on the ground, that one's going to take probably anywhere from a year to two because of the grant application process and just the build itself. So those are three things we're pursuing in spite of being able to talk to Wave or not talk to Wave. So.
Okay, so go ahead.
Well, just one quick question. Back to the FCC thing and even your discussion with Wave and so on, is there any sense of urgency given what's going on with the virus and so on? Are you sensing that they're trying to expedite this stuff or not?
Well, it depends on who they are. I mean, if you're talking about
the FCC.
Yes. Oh, the FCC, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how quickly they're allowing licensing.
Yeah.
But there again, that's the feds, so it's going to take a while no matter what. So, as far as urgency for the schools, obviously that's one of their top priorities. That's why we're really pushing this Forks opportunity. And then the airport to Silverado, the wireless shot that you're talking about, that's more just to get us to our last substation. And then the whole grant process is all that money that's been made available. So we're going to try to go after some of that to try to actually get ourselves to Joyce on the ground so that we can have the backbone available for ISPs or others to come in and do the last mile to actually start getting some higher speeds to Joyce and to the schools and Crescent District out there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Steve, you heard the conversation that we had when Jim brought the question about Mason 3 and the broadband.
Right.
Is there anything you want to add there about?
Well, it's basically apples and oranges, Jim. You know that. I mean, their topology, they're in Shelton. You know, it's a lot different than trying to cross the mountains and the rivers. And we've got DNR that we'd have to deal with and tribes. We have a lot more entities and a lot more, I don't want to say obstacles, but a lot more challenges to try to go further out west. That's just why we haven't done it to date. But with what's going on, we're giving it a lot more emphasis to try to get ourselves out in that direction. We would still ultimately like to get the forks, but that's going to be a long-term project. We're going to try to get BPA to allow us to run over their line if they would. That's a whole other can of worms. But, it's and Kitsap, like Doug was saying, it's a completely different animal than what we're dealing with what they have. And, you know, they have a lot of military funds available, too, for them. So.
And Kitsap had a lot of the residents requesting it or demanding it, and formed, I think, like a LIU.
A lot of LEDs, yeah.
And Fork.
You're muted, Will.
Yeah, Fork is being served by
CenturyLink,
yeah.
At the moment, currently.
Yeah, which goes all around the outside of the peninsula.
Right, coming up down the backside.
Yeah.
South side.
Okay. Any other questions for Steve? I'll move on if not. Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Yep.
Just the last thing I have is just, as you all may know, that a lot of work has been going on First Street where the schools are, the high school and the elementary school there. And PUD was part of that whole project. If you went by there before, there was a lot of overhead lines and just kind of a ugly-looking scenario going along that whole street. Well, that's all been redone, and PUD, as I mentioned, was a part of it with the city. And they had a ribbon cutting on July 9th for that, and we had one of our small bucket trucks in the parade. Nicole went down there, and the parade was pretty small. It was only 6 or 7 cars, but I guess they had a few speeches and a ribbon cutting, and so we participated and were a large part of that whole project. So just want to let you know that things are moving on. That's all I've got, Will.
Thank you. T, do we have any additional new action items? I think you're muted, T.
Yeah, you're muted down there, T. Still shows you as muted, T. I didn't hear any, Will, but T's always good, better than me at picking up on those things. We'll see if...
Okay, we'll pick them up later. All right, our next item is comments from the public.
Okay, if anybody would like to make a comment, just go ahead and give me your first name, and I'll go in the order that they're received. Hearing none again, Will.
Well, what's happening to our public? Okay, no executive session, so I guess if there's no other items to come before the commission, well, maybe I should make that a question. Any additional items to come before the commission?
Not for me.
Okay.
Not for me.
Good. Well, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.